It was Jesus.
The monkeys stand for honesty, giraffes are insincere, and the elephants are kindly, but they're dumb. Orangutans are skeptical of changes in their cages, and the zookeeper is very fond of rum. Secrets are reactionaries, antelopes are missionaries, pigeons plot in secrecy, and hamsters turn on frequently. What a gas you got to come and see at the zoo.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Welcome to this edition of the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here, and it is a pleasure to have some old friends returning to the airwaves this week. And we're going to start off with a huge welcome in just a moment with our dear friend Brianna Romines, who's the president of the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. And Brianna's coming in to talk about ways that we can get involved as a community, whether we are directly impacted or just hear things about those that are struggling with epilepsy. So we're going to talk about that as well. And then a little bit later in the show, I'm excited to welcome a dear friend of the WHFR Airwaves, who has represented the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, in just a huge way. And that is Mary Jo Durivage. She's past president and she sits on some boards, and she's going to give us the 411 on what's happening in the voting arena. It is our right and our responsibility, of course. So we want to be informed voters. So she's going to help us with that in a little bit. But first, Brianna Romines, president extraordinaire of the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan, welcome back. We're so happy to have you here.
Susan, it's such a pleasure to be here. I can't thank you enough. I know we're going to talk more about epilepsy and getting involved, but one of the biggest things that we need, of course, is people to learn and spread awareness. And of course, that's what your show does. So thank you so much.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure. Absolutely. Every week we try to pick things that are timely and relevant, and some things we know are always timely and relevant, but we have to make the time and spot that light on it. And epilepsy is certainly one of those things. Just an interesting, for me personally as an instructor, as a professor here at the college, I have heard people mention students that have had a seizure in a classroom or had been notified that they have been diagnosed, but never directly with me that I've been told anyway, with a potential student struggling with epilepsy. But this past semester, I had two students about 3 weeks apart, 2 to 3 weeks apart, that informed me that they were having some interesting things going on in their lives and getting some, studying done with doctors and so on. And both came back with epilepsy diagnoses. And one of them, I am thrilled, who has just jumped in, his family has jumped in full force. We're going to see him at the epilepsy walk coming up on the 17th, and talk about just wanting every bit of information that they can get. The other family, I think, is processing still, and I recognize that. And I want to talk a little bit about the degrees and sort of that process of how it works, because this is certainly a life-changing diagnosis, but one that, as we've talked in the past, Brianna, I think everybody can relate to in some form or another. So let's start with some of the statistics and see directly how impactful this is to our community here in Metro Detroit.
Yeah, absolutely, Susan. I mean, the thing we like to say generally about epilepsy is it's far more common than you think. And the good way to test this is all you have to do is mention the word epilepsy in some sort of community setting. And the next thing you know, you'll hear people say, oh, epilepsy. Well, my family member or my child or my best friend. So it's one of those that we just like to say so much more common than you think. But to drill into those stats that really, I think, drive this point home is 1 in 26 people will get diagnosed with epilepsy in their lifetime. 1 in 26. And then in addition to that, 1 in 10 individuals will have a seizure. So 10% of people will have a seizure. And then, of course, not all of those seizures will turn into an epilepsy diagnosis, but we know that 1 in 26 will. In terms of, you know, population, about 1.2% of the population have what we call active epilepsy. And if you drill those numbers down, what it looks like for Michigan is about 109,000 people in Michigan have epilepsy, and about 14,000 of them are children. And then if we drill it down one step down to Wayne County, we're at about 22,000 people in Wayne County are living with active epilepsy, and of that, about 2,500 are children. So again, you know, just to go back to what you're saying, it's so much more common than you think. And I'd love to briefly talk about what epilepsy is, because I think when we hear the word epilepsy and we hear the word seizure, you know, maybe we think of, you know, the type of seizure that is the tonic, clonic, that convulsive seizure, the ones where typically folks will, you know, fall to the ground. But that is one of over 40 different types of seizures. And some can be simply a brief staring spell, really momentary. And so to define what epilepsy is, it is a neurological condition characterized by reoccurring unprovoked seizures. And what I really like to, how I like to describe a seizure is if you envision in the brain really a thunderstorm going on that will intercept and change the normal brain wave patterns, really where in the brain and how much of the brain is affected will determine what that seizure looks like. So the one we talked about, Susan, where people convulse and fall, well, that's a type of seizure where the whole brain is being affected. So all the brain waves in both lobes. However, you know, that brief staring spell, or the ones where they, you know, will momentarily maybe grab a piece of their clothing or kind of wander around, oftentimes those are just happening in a portion of the brain. So there's just a quick once over about that.
It's very helpful. We do have, I suppose, a stereotypical ideology, and maybe that's from the movies or from, you know, TV shows and stuff. But thank you for shedding some light on that. Do people that are having seizures always know that they're having a seizure?
Great, great question. So there are some types of seizures where you don't lose full consciousness. So that would be an example of someone that would know that a seizure is happening. The other thing that can accompany seizures are what's called an aura, which is typically a sensation or a taste or a very unique feeling that a person with epilepsy will have that indicates to them that a seizure is coming. So that aura is in fact itself irregular brain waves. But it's oftentimes that hint or that clue to an individual that a seizure is happening. But the seizure we discussed, which is that tonic-clonic, that convulsive seizure, no. That is a loss of consciousness. So that individual might know that one is coming on if they have that aura, but during that seizure, they will have a loss of consciousness, which I think really lends itself well. And I know we'll get into this later about seizure first aid, because one of the components of seizure first aid is not crowding around someone. Because if you can imagine having had that loss of consciousness, and the first thing you see when you come to is, you know, a half dozen or a dozen faces hovering over you, we want to be really conscious of that. Most seizures are not life-threatening emergencies. There are certainly scenarios where they are, but most are not. And so as long as proper seizure first aid is administered, someone can have a seizure and then go back to daily living.
Thank you. And yeah, I absolutely look forward to talking about training options available through the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. And there is a National Epilepsy Foundation, just to make sure that we're clear on that. And the Michigan chapter is one of many, but, you know, it's the best, of course. That's what we say, and it's our favorite. So what? Too bad, you know. Don't even try to debate me on that, people. But and I know Brianna won't, because she agrees. But when we get into the concept of learning about the statistics and figuring out, you know, what to do if someone is affected or impacted or having a seizure, I think there's always that thing in the back of people's minds, like, what did I do to bring this on? Why do I now have epilepsy? I've been a healthy, you know, happy for however long, no issues, no symptoms. Why me? Kind of a thing.
Sure. You know, and that is a very, that's such a valid point. And that's a part of the epilepsy journey, which is what we like to call it. And I know you mentioned kind of two families that you've come in contact with, and maybe one is ready to jump in and one's kind of hanging back. And that is a prime example of why we call it the epilepsy journey. It has cycles, it has phases. There is an emotional processing component that goes with it. There's also some trauma, you know, for that individual as well as those around them that goes into that. And so that's why we term it that way. But Susan, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's comforting in a strange way when we can point to something, right? Like this is why I have epilepsy. And there are some cases where there is a clear known cause. Perhaps there is a tumor. There is a malformation in the brain. There's a genetic, component that predisposed somebody to a high likelihood of having epilepsy. There's also closed head injury. You know, that can absolutely cause epilepsy, accidents. And in some cases, an accident can occur that causes a closed head injury and the epilepsy not occur until years later. But at least in those cases, Susan, there's something to point to. Unfortunately, most people with epilepsy don't have that. So most have that unknown origin. And then just to top it off, and this is the statistics that's really staggering to me and that one that our whole community is rallying behind, is despite the immense investment in treatment options and surgeries and devices and wearables and all of that, we're still looking at about 30% of people with epilepsy. The treatments that are currently available are not making them seizure free. So on top of, you know, walking in this journey and hoping that, you know, the first line of treatment for most cases is medication, but the likelihood, if you've tried a medication and it hasn't worked and you go to number two medication and it hasn't worked, by the time you get to that third medication, unfortunately, there's a less than 1% chance that you will get seizure freedom. And so, yes, there's a couple pinch points in this epilepsy journey that get especially frustrating. Number one, you've talked about, which is not knowing why. And then number two, when, you know, the current treatment options that are being, you know, unfolded for you, you're not seeing results from. And so that's why, again, an organization like ours and our partners in that space are so focused on what can we do to get people to seizure freedom in a time frame that matters to them and keep them there.
We're talking with Brianna Romines, who is president of the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. Always so much important and relevant information to share on this subject matter. So even if, as you're listening today, if you can't think of anyone that you know directly that is impacted, I promise that if we draw a circle around physically where you are right now, like go three blocks or something, there's going to be somebody in there, and that might not be an exact, you know, visual, but you get what I'm talking about. So important as bystanders to understand what to do if you are in a grocery store or at a, you know, at a park or wherever, and you see somebody have a seizure. You hinted a little bit about not having big crowds hanging around, and I completely get that, but not that we, you know, you can, if you'd give us some pointers, but in addition, yeah, tell us how we can actually like officially get some heavy duty training on this. Should it be something we're interested in? And I hope our listeners are.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. The thing I'd love your listeners to remember, stay safe side. So I'm going to briefly talk about those. That's the high level epilepsy seizure first aid. And then absolutely, there's a way that you can get a training that meets your needs. So stay. If you are recognizing that someone is having a seizure, we don't want that individual to be alone. It's very likely that there's something in their surroundings that could harm them. You know, sometimes if somebody's having a seizure and of course they fall to the ground, you know, take a sweatshirt, a book bag, something, put it under their head. So we want to stay with them, or perhaps they're holding a pencil or a pair of scissors or something like that wandering around. So we want to stay with that person and do our best to kind of create this bubble of protection. We don't want to grab them. We don't want to force them. We just want to hang by them and make sure that they can't hurt themselves. And then there is, And that goes into the stay and then the safe, which is, you know, do your best to provide that bubble of protection, which as we like to call it, that they can't harm themselves with anything, walk into the road or, you know, again, have something in their hand. And then there's side. And that really comes into play when we talk about those tonic-clonic seizures, that if someone is having that convulsive seizure, then we want to make sure that they are on their side, because what can sometimes happen during a seizure is, you know, saliva will come into someone's mouth and we don't want them to aspirate or choke on that. So if they're on their side, it will help to drain that. The other helpful hint that I will throw in there is with regards to time. So what we liked, we kind of adjusted it, stay safe side plus five. And so the five rule is that, first of all, if someone is having a seizure and you don't know them and you have no indication if they have a diagnosis with epilepsy, they don't have a medical alert bracelet, it's always important to call 911. But if we're in a scenario where someone in your family unit or friend unit and you know that they have epilepsy, then again, most seizures not being life-threatening, and while it may feel like eternity, most of the time they just last seconds, you can administer this first aid, and the plus five goes into the 5 minutes. So whether or not someone has a diagnosis of epilepsy, once that seizure has hit the five-minute mark, you want to call 911. If it hasn't hit that five-minute mark, it's very likely most seizures wrap up in that under 5 minute period, and you can simply, you know, stay with them until the seizure has happened, tell them what occurred, you know, do what you can, and then they can go back to daily living. And so again, like you said, Susan, that's the high level, stay safe side plus five. And that's what I would love your listeners to remember. But of course, that's high level. And for those of you out there listening that maybe have a connection to epilepsy or are a lifelong learner and just want to continue to learn about this, I really recommend that you go to our website. It's epilepsymichigan.org. We have a Learn tab, and we do a variety of seizure first aid trainings. We do them live with our team. We do them on demand. And then we have like video trainings as well. And so we have a full catalog, everything from, oh, you name it, nurses to school personnel to employers. We've got some specialized trainings, but we also have general seizure recognition and first aid training. And we even developed a 30-minute, what we call kind of a quick 30-minute training. Again, goes over the types of seizures that you may witness and how to do that seizure first aid. And I think, you know, together when we know that, we can just provide a safe environment for those in our community, which is so important.
Knowledge is power, as they say, right? And absolutely true in this situation as well. Brianna, when we have a family member that is diagnosed, I think often it is, again, in everyone's best interest to make sure that that knowledge, common knowledge to the community for family function events and so on and so forth. How do you do that? What advice do you have, and does the foundation have in sort of disseminating the information? Because that could be a pretty difficult thing, not only to admit, you know, individually, of course, but then to have to, how do you spin this in a way that doesn't freak everybody out, but also is going to do the right thing by informing them and bringing them in the loop?
You're right. And it's a lot, you know, it's a lot to digest. We're really fortunate. Right here in Southeast Michigan, right at Wayne State, we have comprehensive epilepsy centers. So what that means is we have dedicated professionals that only see patients with epilepsy. And so we're really grateful, especially where your, you know, listeners are, that there's access to good care. And that's key, right? Trying to get those seizures recognized, identified, diagnosed, and treated as quickly as possible. But we also know that that's what we like to say, kind of just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more, and you touched on it with regards to, you know, processing that information. Oftentimes after the diagnosis, this wave of isolation will come over. For a minute, you think, am I the only one? Are we the only family? Where have someone walked where we are walking before? And so that is really where we come in. So we like to say we've got incredible medical partners out there, and we can be the everything else. You know, we provide the perhaps slightly more digestible epilepsy information on our website. We provide that compassionate listening ear. You know, Susan, one of the things that we do that's really core to our mission is our what we call our Here For You helpline. And we've got a team of people that are here to, of course, provide resources and information and guidance and insight, but also just to listen. Sometimes you just gotta talk it out and then talk it to somebody that gets it, that has walked the walk. So many individuals on our team here have a connection to epilepsy. Either they themselves have epilepsy or they have a child or a family member. So there's a lot of lived experience as well as, you know, professional educational experience that we have here. But yeah, there's so much in terms of social engagements. You touched on that. Like, how important is it to just be amongst the epilepsy community and find those common threads to learn together? So much power. You know, we have a couple different conferences that we do throughout the year, and the one that will be taking place in November, because November is Epilepsy Awareness Month and takes place in Southeast Michigan. But we'll get 200-300 people together to learn together. And it's so powerful to see a room of people all with a connection, learning about epilepsy in a way that'll, you know, have an impact in how their family manages that epilepsy diagnosis.
So research, to the extent that anybody wants to learn more, is available on the website. And I suspect, I'm thinking when a person shares, like, oh, my son or daughter has been diagnosed, Aunt so-and-so might want to, you know, with the medical background, might want to jump in and look at that part. Mm-hmm. And cousin so-and-so might want to just deal with like a support group. And then somebody else might be in denial for a while, but you invite them out to a thing like the summer stroll, and then maybe they start to feel a little more comfortable with it, because living with epilepsy is just that. It is living with epilepsy.
That's right.
It is not something that we can just push away and say, okay, well, I've got that, but nobody's going to know. It's never going to come out. It likely will. So I don't want to say embrace it, but don't be ashamed of it, I guess.
Oh, yes, and thank you for saying that. And I mean, we want to even take it a step further and feel and have people feel empowered in this condition, you know, and so much of our, so another thing that we spend time and energy on are epilepsy self-management programs that, again, when somebody is ready for this in their journey with epilepsy, to learn different techniques to manage stress, manage life, manage their epilepsy, but really flip that script and be empowered by it. You know, we've had one individual in my life who has epilepsy. She calls her epilepsy a superpower, because when she looks at her life, having epilepsy was a key moment that brought, yes, some challenge and struggle, but also brought so much power and joy and fulfillment in this community that I'm telling you, and I know you know this, Susan, you've been a part of this community, in that we are, our arms are open wide, ready to embrace each other and to be there for each other. And I think a perfect example, which you touched on, is our stroll for epilepsy, because you know, I've said this, we're a firm believer in getting people together to really build that camaraderie. And it's so powerful. So the walk, these are a fundraising walk that we do. It's coming up. It's going to be on June 17th. It's held at the Detroit Zoo. And to stand there and see a couple thousand people, all with a connection to epilepsy, out there spreading the word and really locking arms together, it's a good thing I wear sunglasses that day, because I find myself getting so choked up. It's really so powerful. Not to mention a lot of fun. We invite, you know, your listeners to please come out and join us, you know, come to the zoo. It's June 17th. If you want to pre-register, where you can do that up until June 15th, but then you can also just come. And of course, we've got music and food and booths and giveaways and prizes. And one of the things that we're going to have again there this year is we have a 22-foot long inflatable brain that you can walk through. It's got a tunnel down the center, learn about epilepsy, see what a seizure foci looks like while you're walking through the brain and learn about seizures. And it's Just a really incredible day that, of course, on top of all of that, you get a zoo pass and you get to enjoy all that the Detroit Zoo has to offer too. So we've got the Ghostbusters coming out, some Star Wars characters. We've got a raffle for some Detroit Tigers tickets. So it's just really, just a really community focused day that, again, just to elevate the voices, and the lives of those that we serve is the goal.
It's incredibly, incredibly empowering, no doubt about it. I've been going to these for years and years and years, and every year it's kind of like one of those things where you go and you get motivated and it's just a wonderful thing, and it kind of like fills up the cup that slowly empties throughout the year. Then I need to fill the cup up again, and it's more than just the one once a year thing. There's other things. The Toasting Hope event and so on with the foundation, but there's something very special about this Metro Detroit Stroll for Epilepsy. If people want to learn more, we know it's an early day, and then you can stay at the zoo and just enjoy that after. But check-in, I think, starts at like 7:30, and it the stroll 8:30, 8:45 a.m. But it truly is a beautiful morning. How can we learn more to figure out about ticket, prices and register?
Yeah, so our website, again, I'll say it, it's epilepsymichigan.org. That's epilepsy, E-P-I-L-E-P-S-Y, Michigan, all spelled out. I like to say that sometimes, .org. So please check out that website, or you can call our helpline, which is 1-800-377-6226. So whatever method makes sense to you, we are here. Susan, as you mentioned, yeah, it is an early day. We like to get in before the zoo opens, so you kind of get that VIP access before the crowds. But you do need to enter the zoo before the walk starts at 8:30. But I believe parking starts at 7, and then the event kicks off at 7:30. There is a registration fee. Of course, everything that we do, and I should mention this, every element of our mission is at little or no cost, and most of it is no cost. And how we're able to do that is because we have fundraisers like the Stroll. So not only are you coming out and you're having a great time, but you are directly impacting the epilepsy community through your gift. So that donation, it's $25. If you register by June 15th, you can absolutely register at the door, but it does go up to $35. And that gets you, like you said, that entire day, as well as that zoo pass to enjoy well beyond the strolling portion of the day, as well as provide, frankly, life-changing programs and services to our beloved epilepsy community.
Yeah, thank you, Brianna. So that is, in fact, next Saturday, the 17th. Yeah. So it's right around the corner. So we certainly, if you're interested, we definitely want you to come out. You'll not see more purple anywhere else throughout the course of a year. And it's just a wonderful thing. So that is, of course, the official color of the Epilepsy Foundation. Some of our listeners might remember a similar conversation with you back in November for Epilepsy Awareness Month, and we'll absolutely have you back again for that. But there, as I started off our discussion today, every day should be Epilepsy Awareness Day because it is so far-reaching. And we know that through support from people like you, Brianna, as well as all of those team members that you work with to help this foundation be there and be a resource, again, whether free or mostly free resource for people that are struggling. It is an emotional health issue as well as a physical health issue. So we do what we can with the physical side of things with the medical professionals, and then the emotional side, equally important. Just so wonderful to know that these resources are available.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. I mean, we are talking about the whole person and the whole family unit. That's the other thing. Anybody that has an individual with epilepsy in their family, they will tell you it affects the whole family. Sometimes that can look like, managing the healthcare for a pediatric patient. Sometimes that looks like not being able to drive as a result of having active epilepsy. And so the family needing to rally behind that individual to help, transport them. And so again, it's just so important. We take our mission very seriously. the needs of this community mean the absolute world to us. You know, Susan, we're actually celebrating our 75th anniversary this year. We have been here in the state serving the epilepsy community since 1948. And you know what? We've made a lot of headway, but there's still needs and they're great. And we want to be here for the next 75 plus years to be everything that the epilepsy community needs and to be a pathway to better health and living their best life. And I like to say it that way because that's a very personal thing. What that can look like depends on that person and what they want and their capabilities. But everybody deserves the opportunity to live their best life.
We will leave you with the last word, Brianna. Just thank you so much and congratulations on 75 years. That's quite an accomplishment. We look forward to having you back again, continuing to share this very important mission. We hope to look forward to seeing, not hope to, look forward to seeing you at the zoo.
That's right.
Many, many other of our members here of the WHFR community. And again, for any additional information, it's epilepsymichigan.org. Thank you so much for your time.
Susan, thank you so much. It's an honor.
We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Please stay with us.
To some, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much, but that's not true. They're testing out vowels and consonants and trying different sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on meaning, especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome. This is the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here. It is always a pleasure to revisit issues that, they're ongoing, let's put it that way, but revisiting them with old friends is always an extra special thing. And so you will know this voice, I'm sure, and you will know the impact that this particular guest has had in the past so many wonderful years here on the WHF, our journal, and in the Dearborn Heights community. I am speaking about the one and only immediate past president and current board member of the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, the one and only Mary Jo Durivage. Mary Jo, welcome back to the journal.
Well, Susan, and thank you so much. I'm smiling here. It's great to be back. Thank you.
We knew that when you were no longer president, that you weren't going to go very far. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that's for sure.
Side of this. And that's a wonderful thing. We celebrate that, certainly. We also celebrate the league because we know that as a nonpartisan, secure, safe, strong, and very active organization here in the Dearborn Heights community, we can count on this group to get the facts, to get them straight, and to help make educated decisions and informed decisions as voters here in the state of Michigan. So we know the league has been around for many, many, many years doing just that, and we always welcome you and any member of your team to help kind of spread the news of what's going on since 1920, by the way. My goodness gracious. But we want to kind of jump back to, let's say, since February, January of 2023. And Mary Jo, I know it's been a very active time and you're a very active chapter. So what's going on? What do you want to share with us?
Well, I thought I would just kind of talk, as you said, maybe beginning with February, just some of the things we've done, which we do every year, or some are a little bit different. But so in February, we did our annual Who's Who, Your Elected Officials. And this covers elected officials, actually all the way from the president down to the school boards, for people that live in Dearborn Heights, and Inkster. And this year is the second year we've had them also in Arabic. And so they've been well received. So we're very thankful that we can do that. And we're thankful to our volunteers, donors who help make that possible. And we make these available in the city halls, the libraries, and the community centers for all three cities. And it was funny, one of our members was marching in the Inkster Memorial Day Parade and with a local AACP, and somebody from the Inkster Library ran up to her and says, oh, we need some more voter guides, or we need some more who's. So Jerry delivered those to her yesterday. So that was kind of fun.
So people give out candy to parades.
I should have brought him yesterday when I went, yes.
That's
another activity that we've done every year for several years is the youth voter registration. So members of our league go into the high schools in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights and talk to the students who will be eligible to vote in the next election or to register. Well, actually, they register that day if they want to. So our members explain to the students how important it is to vote, how easy it really is to register to vote. If they want to vote there in person as opposed to do it online, they can help them. But what's kind of been neat is the last couple of years, facilitator, Laura Dudgeon, has worked with the students themselves to help with this activity, so that sometimes it's a student actually doing the spiel that the league member, you know, would usually do. So that's kind of neat. And then it's one activity that we can get local community members involved. They don't have to be members of the league. And so so that's always been kind of fun. And then another thing that we were involved in is trying to get members, of course, but also community peoples to participate in getting comments into the Federal Register about adding the MENA category to census. And MENA, of course, stands for Mideastern North America. And as you probably know, Susan, they were not counted in the last census because it hadn't been approved yet. And there actually is an article in the news today talking about that. And apparently Debbie Dingell has been, ever since she got to Washington, you know, trying to get this passed. It was apparently introduced in the Obama presidency, but, you know, with the way things went, it didn't get anywhere. So the hope is that if everything's on board, we should have it passed by next summer of the summer of next year. Mm-hmm. And kind of funny, the young woman that's interviewed in the article is actually a member of our league, Sarah. So if you read it, you'll know.
Oh, that's great. We had Leslie Herrick from our city council, as well as Terry Pilarski, represents another facet of the sort of collection of bodies to really get this resolution moving forward. And so we had a nice interview a couple of weeks ago. I learned so much about this that I just, you know, you don't hear about these things. You don't really understand that they're happening behind the scenes, which is one of the, I think, important reasons for discussions like this. So right. I'm glad you brought it up and that it is something that is certainly being supported and encouraged. But this is just one example, again, of that thing that you maybe hear it, but you don't really get it, and so you don't bother. But, boy, it impacts a lot of people, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. And, you know, hopefully we'll get so much more money because, you know, we're able to show the different groups and stuff. You know, it's kind of funny about that, though, because the league belongs to a steering committee, if you will, of something called the ICCD. And you're nodding your head. Well, you're saying yes. That actually came up during one of the meetings. We were trying to see how can we get the word out. And I actually suggested, well, why don't we do something about MENA? You know, go to the city council. And then we found out that actually there were people working on it already. So then it was kind of a, you know, combined effort, but that was kind of neat. Yeah. Okay, so another thing we did in terms of advocacy this year that would not be every year is, okay, so as you know, hopefully the listeners know that Dearborn is undergoing a charter revision and they have regular meetings. And so I've been watching them, as many of our members have been. And one of the issues that has come up is the idea of electing city council members via districts rather than at large, which is the way it is now. And so there you can maybe, like Detroit has some you vote by districts, but then there's some at large. So anyway, we did a little research, and it is recommended by something called the National Civic League, in their model city charter, ninth version, that cities of our size do have this way of electing city council members to have better representation. And so that'll be interesting to see how that goes when the charter is finally up for voting on. And then in April, actually April 1st, we had our annual Meet Your Elected Officials. We had it at Christ Church on a Saturday afternoon, which seemed to work pretty well. Typically, we have them in February, which can get kind of cold. And so I'm sure the nice weather helped with the attendance, but it was very well attended. And it was our first in-person event. So we were really happy that it went so well. And then, so then I was looking at my last voter, which is the newsletter that goes out to our members. And I thought some of the issues that were in the newsletter would kind of give you an idea of the kinds of, you know, other things that we're involved in. And so in no particular order, we're encouraging our members to be poll workers. And also, as you know, we passed Prop 2, Promote the Vote, and in 2022. And so right now, of course, the Secretary of State is very busy with, you know, working with the legislature and how to implement Prop 2. And a lot of it's going to cost a lot of money. So we are encouraging our members to ask them again to contact their legislators to ask them to support the Secretary of State's request for full funding for election administration. And this amount also includes some historic disinvestment. In other words, maybe there are old machines that should have been replaced years ago. And so then in the newsletter, I give a link to the paper that describes more of this information. Mm. And we have an observer corps. So we have somebody regularly going to the observing the Charter Commission. I kind of look on my own for the city, Dearborn City Council. We have a couple members that watch Dearborn Heights. And what's the last one? Oh, the school board. So we have a member from Allegria Village that actually drives over there and watches those things. I watch them on TV. But so that's kind of neat. That's something we haven't really done before. And we always advertise all the coffees that the different legislators have. Alabas Farhad has monthly ones, and Aaron Burns has monthly ones, and the Senator Santana has quarterly ones. So we always try to publicize those. And there's always information in our newsletter about the Charter Commission, what's new, when the dates are. And we had something about the Dearborn budget hearing come up on June 9th, because we're not just voting. We want people to, you know, once they vote, to get involved, you know, in the city and have their voice be heard. And then, of course, I had a blurb about the National Popular Vote, which we can talk about a little bit later. So and in terms of how we let people know what's going on, we have a member, Betsy Cushman, who I know you know, does a wonderful job on our Facebook, posts all the time, lots of pictures. And so that's, I always look at it to help me with my newsletter. And then we actually do two. We do voter, as I mentioned, that goes to the members. But we do another one called League of Women Voters DDH News, and that goes to our supporters. So we use constant contact. We can do up to 500 people. So I'm up to like 480 or something. So if a person goes on our website, they can sign up to get the newsletter. And so I was going through my stuff, and article I will be posting on the news, because it's not just league stuff, but information I want everybody to know about. Citizens Research Council of Michigan has just posted a blog about implementing Promote the Vote constitutional amendment. And then I'll have a link to it just to kind of educate people. And then the website. So myself and another member work on the website. And if a person went to it, they would see on the menu three big important parts, information for contacting the legislators. One of the neat, if you go there, you'll see one thing. This is Michigan Legislature. And this will give you bill information. And also, you know, the status of it. Also, you can watch hearings live or you can watch them recorded, which is kind of neat. And then I've got a section on the Charter Commission. And then I've got another section called Opportunities for Civic Involvement. So I know there have been important hearings at the Dearborn Heights City Hall, so I try to put that in there, you know, encourage people to do it. And then we have a section called Voting Elections. And one I've got, one page is called Alternative Methods of Voting. And one is ranked choice voting, which we can maybe do another show on. I'm really a proponent of that. And then the other one is the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. And so we always have information about that because the league definitely supports that. So that's what we've been doing. And then we're getting ready for our annual meeting.
Oh, my goodness. I need to take a breath for you in all of this, the shared information. Well, this is a ton, Mary Jo. This has only been a few months. Oh, my goodness gracious. And this is why we need to have you back on often, you and Betsy and Jen and all of the wonderful, hardworking the people at the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. So, I mean, I was taking furious notes. Every one of these things is fascinating. I want to pop back over to Proposal 2. And I remember when we were sort of talking about the need for this to happen and, you know, so on the other end of the passing of this legislation and so on. But like anything else, it's one of those things that if we don't think about it, we don't hear about it, we don't read about it, we forget about it. And this is big because it is sort of still in the works, if you will, as you indicate.
Right.
A lot of this involves funding. So this is kind of one of those things that we're kind of tracking as we go. So what can we as basic citizens who supported this and who believe in it, what should we do? What can we do? How can we?
Well, I mean, the hard work in terms of the citizens has already been done, you know, getting all those petitions. And that was quite a feat. But, you know, people ran up to us to sign it because they really want voting to be, we don't like to use the word easy, but more convenient, I guess, is easy, but more accessible. You know, it's a basic right. We just want to make people be able to vote and not have to wait in lines. So at this point, the legislation has to be passed to implement what we agreed to in the amendment. So things like the big thing seems to be the 9 days of early voting, because that affects the clerks, obviously, and they're concerned about overtime or, you know, hiring extra people for those 9 days to overlook everything. I know that the Secretary of State has been, you know, working with clerks trying to figure out things to do. I know there's ideas about maybe cities going together on them and having one site, and or maybe that in smaller areas that might be just a county seat, you know, different ways of doing that. So I mean, and then more machines, you know. So I know that one part of it has been passed. I think I read that the one of the provisions was that if a person, if a military person or their family member, I think it includes their family members, were sending their ballot in and it was late past the election day, but it did get there by, I think it's 6 days, it would still be counted. And so, again, that was in the amendment, but it had to have some legislation enabled. And I believe that legislation was enabled. So that's the first thing I've heard about. But it's really those 9 days, how they're going to pay for all that, that comes to mind, that's going to be, you know, it's going to be expensive, mm-hmm. But you know, it's our democracy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So many of these things really warrant their own spin-off discussions, and I know that everything isn't interesting to everybody, so it's nice to have this sort of repository with the website and the news, uh-huh. News uh-huh. And so on, so people can kind of pick and choose. You know, we want to pick our battles, and we want to pick the things we have the time to get behind and support and so on. Another big topic is DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion policy, and
So you're looking at our website.
Yeah, I am. And I'll tell you, even here at Henry Ford College, our union, Local 1650, the American Federation of Teachers, we were one of the very first in the nation to, maybe even the first, actually, to create a policy or a position, a DEI director in our within our union. Our college is doing the same thing. We are searching for, currently in the works, for a DEI director here at this community college. So clearly it's important. We recognize that as educators and as just, I think, informed people. But in terms of, like, kind of dealing with official laws, policy, rules, what's going on with that? Any hot topics?
Well, I would say in terms of the league that it's more of getting people, members and leadership of the league, to really purposefully think about diversity in everything we do, including who we do outreach to. And, you know, you'll hear people say, well, you know, we invite them to our meetings, but they never come. Well, excuse me, you need to go to their community and see what they need, you know. Now, in our particular one, there are a lot of older women like me that have been around for ages. And we, of course, try to get, you know, newer members. And actually, our treasurer is a young person. She's amazing. And so that's one part of diversity. And in Dearborn, my gosh, you know, we've got the Mideastern community, and we do have several members that, you know, are part of that community. And we have to listen. We have to say, you know, what do you need? And that's one reason I think I referred to this ICCD, Intercultural Community Center of Dearborn. And the league is a central member of it because basically we have our office there. But obviously we more than that, we care about the issue. We want, you know, people to know each other. Or I think the motto is like connect, know, and then empower, something like that. But the idea that you got to meet them first. So in our chapter league, I would say we try to look at everything through the DEI lens, is the way I put it. And it could be things like, okay, is, you know, can people get to our meetings via the bus? You know, they'd have to walk a little bit, but it's not too far from Michigan. But do we have, you know, a ramp for people that need, you know, wheelchairs? And I know one thing that that National started doing, and the first time I ever saw it was on an ACLU signature, but the idea of putting she, her personal pronouns when you're on Zooms like this. So that, you know, that's a little bit, you know, educating other members to do that, things like that. But it is definitely, you're right, it's definitely important. And I'm sure that at the national level, when they're looking for board members, they're trying to find, you know, people of color, or, you know, people that would bring something new, you know, to the board other than, you know, the white women.
Well, if I
could be so blunt.
if nothing else, you are blunt always, Mary Jo, and that's what we appreciate about you. But what I love on the website, the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights website, is the definition of diversity. I shouldn't say definition, but the components. I'm just going to read a few here, but this is, I've never seen one quite this broad, and I love it. So it's not just gender identity, ethnicity, race, native or indigenous origin, age, generation, sexual orientation, culture, religion, belief system, marital status, parental status, socioeconomic status, accent, ability, mental health, geography, nationality, work experience, thinking style, personality type. I mean, that goes pretty deep. But really, that is diversity, isn't it?
It is.
You just have a bunch of people that think, look, act, and everything the same way. We don't necessarily get things done that will benefit others, you know.
I just want people to know, our league did not write all that stuff up. I'm sure you must have followed a link, but it has been pretty interesting to see discussion on what should be added. And this isn't really related to the league, but you know, the latest I'm hearing about is people being discriminated against because of their weight. And yeah, you know, and so I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And yeah, and I literally am reading this from the website. I did click the first link. Yeah. I don't know who wrote it, but it's amazing. You don't think about that kind of stuff. And one of the things that June, the month of June, is about, you know, this is Pride Month. This is right. Inclusivity Month. And so it's right. It's more than the color of your skin. And that's right. That's a very exactly. Important component. But my goodness, it is far reaching. And so I'm loving that this is, you know, that this is on the foreground, on the front page, if you will, of the League of Women Voters, you know, mindset here. As we work through so many different issues and so many different opportunities for involvement as citizens, as voters, proud voters here in this community, Mary Jo, it's nice to know that we have resources from and including the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. I recognize that often it is hard to stay nonpartisan when passionate, but the group, you know, this organization does a wonderful job of keeping that, and that's certainly an important way to do it.
And I was just going to say, if people have a question about any public policy, not that I'll always know the answer, but there's a place on our website where it says, contact us, something like that. You just put your name and your email and your question, and we'll try to, you know, we will get back to you one way or another. Yeah. And you can also sign up for the newsletter.
Great. You also shared with me earlier that you are, on the committee to, or maybe leading the committee to recruit new members. If you had a minute to pitch why this is the organization for someone listening, why don't you share that with us?
Well, it's a great way to get involved at any level. Let's put it that way. So if you were working with the youth voter registration thing, you could be all out working for a couple months and then, you know, go back to raising your kids or whatever. And we have a lot of people that are basically just, you know, supporters. They have other things to do, but I think just joining because you believe in what we work on, what we believe in. I mean, like you, Susan, I'm sure you belong to several organizations that you maybe one meeting, but you believe in what they do. And so I hope that's why people would join us. And then if you just want to meet some like-minded people, you know, we care about the government, make it better. You can't go wrong. And, you know, hopefully with things opening up a little more, we'll have some more public meetings and you can actually meet some of us. We'll probably be meeting at Christ Church. We have an office there in the basement there when we do have a meeting, but, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, no, that works. I did see on the website, something about June 15th. Is that? Yeah.
That's the annual meeting. And so we, again, well, this first time we'll be, second time we'll be meeting in person, first time for the annual meeting for a couple of years. And we're going to have Fadwa Hamoud, the works with the Attorney General, speak to us. So that'll be fun because she's a hometown girl, so to speak. And it'll be fun to see people and just kind of enjoy each other for a while, I guess, you know, hear what we've been doing, what, you know, what we want to do next year, you know, things like that.
Nice.
And guests are invited. I mean, there is information on the website, actually, under the calendar.
Terrific. Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. One of the things I know, we are participating in Concert of Colors, Diversity Festival, World Music Festival, and I know that there's an event taking place at the Arab American National Museum
That
relates to community, culture, and race. We'll be talking more about all of these events, of course, as we get into the, you know, next month, but it's just so nice that we can kind of connect to these other things kind of were springboarding off of the League of Women Voters, you know, sort of orientation and then jumping over to these other really impactful things.
And that's what, so that with the website, that's where I try to be creative. And if I hear about something that's going on that has anything to do with civic engagement, voting, but also, as you just mentioned, to get to know our community better. And so, you know, as a member of the museum, I get a lot of emails and I know what's going on usually. So I do try to post those in the calendar. And I hope I try to remember to look at the calendar, you know, because some of them, when it gets closer to the time, you want to put on the front page. But yes, definitely try to, you know, put other stuff out there for people to enjoy and get to know each other better.
Yeah.
So thanks.
Oh, sure. We thank you always, Mary Jo, for your time and your effort. And please, our thanks to the entire group, the entire membership. We know that we can count on this for information as well as potential involvement, advocacy, and so on. How specifically do we find this website we've been talking about for a while here?
Well, I mean, I could give you the website, but then, so it's just www.lwvddh.org. But I know if you Google, you're going to find it.
There you go.
Easy and enough. Hopefully sometimes you'll be Googling. Say, it would be really nice to know if people are Googling National Popular Vote if our website comes up. I know it has to do something with Google. I don't know how it works, but...
Those darn analytics.
and actually, if people were to look on the state league website, also it has a thing about here's a find a chapter or something, and you could find us. But that's another, you know, good website, and information about action alerts, and we try to put that on our website too.
Excellent. Well, thank you. We appreciate your time as always, and wish you continued success in helping get the word out. That's what it's about, and doing just that, Mary Jo. Thank you as always for your time.
Oh, thank you, Susan, so much.
Pleasure. We've got more on the way. Again, speaking with Mary Jo Duravage, immediate past president and current board member of the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. This is the WHFR Journal. Please stay with us.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists. Clarksdale, south of Memphis, Tennessee.